Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. When state lawmakers return to Raleigh this week from their spring break, education issues will be front and center in legislative debates, from teacher pay and school funding to vouchers and reducing regulations on charter schools. Here to talk about the education issues facing this session of the General Assembly is Representative Greg Meyer from Orange County. Well, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Let's talk about education. You have a strong background in it. There's a lot of education issues before the General Assembly. But before we get to the bills that have been filed, Judge Manning had another hearing this week about whether or not the state is fulfilling its commitment to give students a sound basic education. How do you put that in perspective for folks who see in the news a judge is trying to figure out how our schools are doing?
Well, I'm glad that there's this external pressure that's being applied. I think it keeps a sense of urgency, helps to balance out the powers of who's working on education issues. I know from working in education that people in the system are doing about all they can, but you're often just running in that hamster wheel. And now being in the General Assembly, I see lots of people with ideas, but sometimes the ideas are pet projects or meddling and not necessarily focused on what's really most important for education. So having Judge Manning put this specific lens on what are we doing for the lowest performing kids and the poorest school districts, I think makes sure that all of us keep our eyes on the prize.
Overall, how do you think our schools are doing when people ask you? What do you tell them?
I think that our schools are actually doing great and can do better. There's lots of criticism and kind of a rhetoric around failing schools. But in the last 50 years, our public schools have virtually eliminated adult illiteracy in the state of North Carolina and in the country. And we see that we have the highest high school graduation rates that we've ever had. We're sending more kids to college than we've ever sent. We're doing a better job of matching our high school education with community colleges and career preparation. All of those things are good. There are specific areas where we need to improve. We need to improve the services we provide to the lowest performing students. We need to provide more resources to the poorest school districts because we have vulnerable kids and vulnerable communities that still need additional support.
North Carolina just started this year an A through F grading system, which gives every school a letter grade based 80% on achievement, 20% on growth, roughly. And to no one's surprise, a vast majority of schools that didn't do well have a lot of low-income kids in it, and you filed a bill to change the formula. So I want to ask you about that. But first, the whole idea of slapping a letter grade on schools, what sort of message does that send to the teachers and the students?
Well, the problematic aspect of the current letter grading system is that it's all stick and no carrot. It reduces the value of a school to a couple of very simplistic measures, and because there are many schools that receive D's or F's, without any real sense of what are we going to do for those schools or what should they do to improve, it's very punitive. I think it's possible to see how to use a grading system that is more of a carrot, more of an incentive that says we're going to reward schools who are working on strategic things that we think are important. We're going to reward schools that are closing achievement gaps. We're going to reward schools that are doing a better job in getting kids into advanced math and science classes. That would actually be a public policy tool that might get some leverage for positive change, but that's not the system we have now.
And your bill would change the way the formula works.
I have a bill that would actually change the formula so that it would be 40% on achievement and then 20% on growth, and then another 20% on the growth of the lowest 20% of student performers, right? So that overemphasizes the role of schools in helping the lowest performing kids. And then a final 20% that would go to the State Board of Education, where they could decide what criteria to use based on their strategic initiatives. And hopefully that would round out the grading system so that it wasn't all based on test scores, but based on some things that we know we want schools to do and that help make a great school, things beyond tests.
What do you say to parents who now see that their child's school, even whether their kid is doing well or not, that they read in the newspaper that their child's elementary or middle school has an F? What do you tell them?
My answer to that actually comes from my experience working with parents in schools, which is you should make your decision about your kid's school based on your experience and your child's experience. If the state's grading scale gave your kid's school an F, but you love your teacher and you love your school, keep your kid there. That's the right place for your kid.
In other states, this grading system has been used to actually either close schools or have them taken over or transformed into charter schools. Are you worried that that might be the motivation of some who are pushing the current formula and the current grading system?
Well, I have concerns about the overall school choice movement and how a lot of these policy pieces fit into an ideology that wants to emphasize choice as the way to improve public education. Because I think that there's a flaw in the choice ideology that once all the choices are available, if people don't take those choices or there isn't enough room in all those choices and we still have kids who are left behind in struggling schools, schools that are underfunded, schools that don't have the support that they need to improve, what's our public policy for them? The people that push the choice ideology don't have an answer for that question, and I think we need to figure out that question maybe more than anything else.
And that brings me to my next question. It's roughly the 20th anniversary of the creation of charter schools in North Carolina. Obviously, there's some that do very well, some that don't do so well. We're in an era of sort of deregulating the accountability of charter schools. What do you make of the charter experiment, for lack of a better word?
I think charters are probably here to stay. I think that we should be worried about communities like Durham County and Mecklenburg County, where we're getting close to a tipping point of charters pulling enough kids out of the public school system that you might start to see the community overall start to pull away from its investment in public schools, because families that don't have their kids in public schools will stop wanting to support them financially. That's the biggest concern to me. I think that there's a lot that can be done if we have the political will to capitalize on some of the promise of charter schools. We should really be looking at how do we create collaborative partnerships between charters and public school systems so that they work together to solve education problems. And we should be looking at accountability for charter schools, both financial accountability and accountability and performance. If a charter school is doing better overall than its local public school system, and it's helping kids, then I can support that. But if the charter school isn't doing better than the local public schools, we need a way to close those schools and put those resources into something that's more effective for kids.
There's been a lot of attention to the transparency of how money is spent in charter schools and the wave of sort of for-profit, many times out-of-state for-profit companies that are coming to North Carolina just to run the charters.
I think that's part of the choice movement, is opening up the charter field to more for-profit entities, and it's based in ideology that competition and for-profit industry can do things better than government. I think we should be skeptical of that. I'm sure that some of those schools and some of those charter management organizations will be effective and accountable, but when we're putting public dollars into private hands with the expectation that we're going to get a public benefit out of it, right, that we're going to get an educated citizenry, then we need to hold those private providers accountable for the way that they use the public dollars and actually getting us to the deliverables that we want. We want kids who are educated.
And speaking of using private dollars for public purposes, the Supreme Court of North Carolina has before it a challenge to the voucher law. What is your take on that case and the calls by some of your colleagues to dramatically expand the funding for vouchers?
I'm not a constitutional expert, and I don't want to predict what the Supreme Court is going to do, but I hope, as a friend of public schools, I hope that they find the vouchers unconstitutional and we can put that argument to bed.
Let's talk a little bit about the budget. The House is putting the budget together now. The House will go first this year. What are your hopes for the House budget? I want to talk about teacher pay, but beyond that, the funding for public schools that has been cut in recent years.
I can be optimistic and say that I know there are some Republican colleagues in the House who understand that we need some additional investments in public schools. But the fact is, there's not willingness to deal with the revenue side of the equation. And until we're honest about the fact that the Republican tax plan has left the entire state woefully short on revenue, then we're not going to have a serious conversation about what it takes to run adequate public schools.
Governor McCrory proposed giving roughly a third of the teachers a raise, including raising starting teacher salary to $35,000 that the Republicans have promised to do this year. What will it mean to teachers if only a third get a raise after many didn't get a raise last year?
The plan that the Republicans have put forward on teacher pay will continue to come under attack from teachers. So part of it is going to be that only a third of the teachers get the raise. Another part of it is that with the new system where teachers only get a raise once every 5 years, there are people who didn't get a raise last year, very much of one. Everybody got a little bit one. People who didn't get very much one last year and aren't going to get very much of one this year, where their colleagues might be getting a bigger one. You know, for teachers, they're not motivated by more pay, but they do want to be treated fairly. And the system just doesn't have the ring of fairness to many teachers. And the longer it goes on and the more they see that, well, one year you get something and one year you don't, there's going to be more and more backlash.
And all these things we've talked about, do you think they contribute to a what feels like, whether it's disrespect or lack of faith in the public school system by the policymakers? And if so, what is that sort of, what sort of message does that send to people who are working with kids?
I think that's exactly what teachers are frustrated by right now. You walk in almost any school in North Carolina and you hear teachers saying that they feel disrespected, that there's a lack of support, that North Carolina doesn't value what they're doing. That, of course, has something to do with compensation, but it also has to do with teachers are well-prepared professionals who have dedicated themselves to a craft, and they want to be leaders. They want to be the one making decisions about how they teach, and they should be because they know what they're doing. And the more meddling that comes from the General Assembly, the less supported and less respected they feel. And so it's a pretty big storm for teachers right now. And I think that's why you see teachers leaving and you see teachers frustrated. And I hope that one of the positive results is we'll see teachers increasingly be willing to speak out and advocate and talk to their elected officials at the state level and other levels and maybe even run for office.
Well, let's hope so. Thanks for all you're doing in Raleigh, and we really appreciate you being with us. Thanks for your time.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Up next, the problems with a proposal for another $1 billion reduction in state income taxes. Stay with us.